dude, I have this chicken. Like a, not a real chicken, like a
time dead out.
What?
Can we like do the intro before you talk to me about chickens and gardening?
I thought that was like leading up to the.
That's your shtick.
Why?
Animals, gardening, farm animals and gardening.
No, this was a dead chicken. I'm gonna cook it. I have a whole chicken. Okay. You know, like a chicken roaster.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure out how I want to cook that. I think I'm gonna braise it. So you put it in like a cast iron pot.
Okay.
Like season it all up.
Okay.
350. Let all of the steam juices like cook it. Take the top off. Raise the heat a little bit. Get a little crisp on it. I think that's what I'm going to do. Okay. Well, why are we talking about that?
I don't know. See, this is why I wanted to start out with the intro. Like, this is Low Expectations episode 10. Gary, it's good to see you.
Anthony, it's good to see you. Dude, episode 10.
Episode 10.
Is that double digits?
Double digits.
That means something.
I was going to ask you to tell me 10 in German, and then I remember you don't know it. I started counting in French. That's not right. I started counting in French the other day, and Lauren's like, I'm pretty sure you mixed some Spanish in with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I only made it to like 6 or 7. So, yeah. Once again, we don't need to talk about that again.
Dude, but Low Expectations. We did it.
Low Expectations, episode 10. So, yeah, here's the thing you don't understand, Gary. Your shtick is you come in and you want to talk about gardening, cooking, and we're very different that way. Like you when you start talking to me about stuff like that, I check out.
I have to get warmed up. The problem is because especially this is like first time. This is first time we're recording early in the day.
Early in the day.
We're talking early.
I'm a little worried.
I am too. So I have to like we have to like warm up. So like talking about something that doesn't really mean anything before we get to the juicy stuff that everybody cares about.
All right.
But I bet more people care about how I'm going to roast my chicken than maybe what we're going to talk about today. But maybe not. I like today's
topic. This topic,
pretty good.
This topic I think is going
to
be super interesting. Well, it's super interesting to me.
To you. So being that it's show number 10.
Yes.
Like people throw birthdays for, you know, a 2-year-old and they make a big deal about it. So like, is 10 like a big deal? Should we be like celebrating more than what we are? Like we just said 10 and we ran right by it. Like it's double digits. It's kind of like what does a 10-year-old do? They start playing sports, like, and they're actually playing sports versus just being like, so this is like maybe the next step in our evolution of producing good artistic content for the listener. Do you think that's true?
Artistic?
Dude, this is art what we do, buddy.
I don't know about that. I don't think we need to do anything special for 10.
Okay.
I think people celebrate. I'm actually a pretty anti-kid birthday guy.
I am too.
I think it's ridiculous. And the gender reveal stuff too.
Oh, that's got to go.
Yeah. And I also don't understand in our culture, the whole gender reveal thing where it appears that people can just decide what they want to be. Like, why are we doing gender reveals? Why are these parents doing gender reveals? Maybe the parents that are doing gender reveals actually believe in binary, like male, female. That's it. End of story.
But should we? Because that child hasn't had the option to pick what they want to be yet.
That's
so I don't
true.
Know that we should do that. We shouldn't bind their consciences.
But on the other end of it, you know, they might go out there and commit a lot of crime and their brains aren't developed.
Okay.
So, you know, that I think is the biggest argument. That is the biggest hypocrisy within that argument. You have these people who are like, when you're 5, you can decide if you're a boy or a girl.
Right.
Or just you move in between them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fluid.
Yes. But when you're 16, 17, and you decide to carjack someone, your brain isn't fully developed.
Right.
So you need, instead of going to prison, you need to be helped in some way. I'm like, okay, you're the same person that believes both these things at the same time. I think it's the greatest hypocrisy and one of the greatest arguments against it.
I agree with you. And like how many things in society do we tell children no to? Like as society, like it's a societal norm that they don't drive till they're 16.
Sure.
They don't. And what's crazy in our country that you don't drink alcohol
Right.
Until you're 21.
Right.
That's wild to me.
So
you can choose to change your sexual parts.
Right.
Anytime you want to, but you can't have a sip of alcohol until you're 21. Right.
Well, in certain place, and some places parents need to be approving, but they're trying to change that now. Like, young kids can make this decision right. without parents' approval. There, you know, there's people that are pushing for that. But the other interesting
thing. But just because you approve that your kid is good at 14 to drive doesn't mean that they can drive.
Right. But that's coming. See, the problem with this line of thinking, like if you critically think about how we are operating right now in our country and our culture, how some people are operating within our country, you have to start understanding that at some point, what if you have a kid who says, I now identify as 16, so therefore I want a license. And people are
don't
be ridiculous. Like we would never allow that happen. Well, why not? Well, because they're not. And then they start realizing, wait, my whole argument is falling apart, except they don't. They're so blinded that they don't even understand. Like, if you start making an argument against someone identifying as older than they are, well, then that's the same argument that should be being made to change your sex, to change your genitalia.
And it's funny that the genitalia doesn't make me male or female, but because I'm not this or that, I need to change my sexual parts to affirm who I actually am. Well, wait a minute, what?
Right.
I thought you didn't need, like, that part, that body part, whichever one you have, doesn't identify or make you who you are.
Right.
Like, sex-wise. But you have to allow me and affirm me and make sure that I can get this surgery in order to have now this part.
Yes.
Which makes me this way. Like, it's so weird.
Right.
I don't get it.
Well, and that,
but I'm dumb. I'm just a guy, you know,
And
dude, what does this have to do with policing?
Well, we're getting
law
there.
Enforcement.
We're getting there. But that's why that question, what is a woman, by, was that Walt? No. What's the guy's name on
Show Prep's lacking, dude.
Yeah. Show Prep's lacking. The guy on Daily Wire.
Walsh.
Yeah. That why his documentary, What Is a Woman, was so brilliant, because people were like, oh, we need to do this. We identify as a woman. He's like, well, what is a woman?
Yeah, let's see what that is first. Like, let's go to the first thing.
Right. And he had like these professors, like, he's like, that's circular reasoning.
Yeah.
The professor's like, well, it's someone who identifies as a woman. He's like, yeah, but what is a woman?
But what does that mean? Yeah.
What does that mean? Yeah. So that's why that question was so brilliant. But no, what does this have to do with law enforcement? Well, we're going to talk about two different things.
Okay.
And we're talking about appeasement in law enforcement.
Appeasement.
So it's kind of really a microcosm of our culture. Like, we've just been talking about how people are appeasing evil, appeasing sin, appeasing stuff that is perverse and outside of what has generally been considered the standard operating procedure of people, of humans. And obviously, you know, you and I, Gary, we think the standard is established by the word, by God's word.
Right.
So, and regardless of your standard, you have to ask yourself, where does my standard come from? It doesn't just come from thin air. Your standard has to come from somewhere. So, yeah, we're going to talk about appeasement in law enforcement. So,
appeasement. So, what does appeasement mean?
Approval.
Okay.
You know, I think I didn't look up the actual definition of appeasing, but to appease something means you approve of it, you allow it, you try to gain
the support of
or standing with people in order to, you know, try to keep the peace.
Okay.
That sort of thing. So one of my favorite quotes is Winston Churchill.
I want to hear it.
An appeaser is one who feeds a crocodile, hoping it will eat him last. And I really think that is something that we're seeing, not just in law enforcement, but our focus on this, you know, episode, obviously, is going to be on law enforcement. So let me ask you this, Gary. When, or do you remember any time where you saw this in the profession? Like, as you think back over your career, do you remember any moment or anything that you saw where you were like, what? maybe you didn't even realize it was this appeasement, but you thought about it and you were like, this just seems off.
Man, you put me on the spot, dude.
I know. I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, but I was just curious if.
So I think the biggest thing was during, I mean, we've talked about this 1,000 times, like it's boring at this point, but in, what was it? 2020, like protesters, we'll use that word, protesters.
Okay.
Just blocking streets. And it seemed like people appeased the protesters by giving them a public space that others no longer could have to appease them, what they wanted,
right?
To be able to scream and yell at the cops.
Like, and there was a outward action by law enforcement to try to have conversations with these people, to kneel with them, to,
yes, we saw that. Yeah.
To try to work with them in some way, to allow them to break the law, and then on the back end to be working with them and trying to meet their demands or whatever. Okay, so that,
and I'm not like, and that to me was not as, like, I look back on that and I don't think that was a big, huge, like, mistake for law enforcement. Where this is where you and I would differ. I think it was something that was tried, and I don't think it worked, obviously.
Right.
But I don't know that was necessarily a bad thing to try.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with,
it's like amoral. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not like a right or wrong.
Right. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with when you have a protest moving towards a riot or whatever, identifying those protesters that are the leaders of that protest and meeting with them. I think the difference in 2020 was that meeting with the leaders of these protests, there was a desire to try to meet their demands and appease them instead of identifying reality and explaining to them what they may and may not do.
Right.
Or if that conversation was had, you may not do this. There was no consequences backing that up.
Right. And it does come to feelings, or like putting, like fronting, like a face, like you're making face with someone.
Right.
Versus,
it can be a respectful,
versus a black and white type thing. Hey, get off the street, or we're going to send the dogs on you. Right. That's
right.
Like, we're telling you what's going to happen. Appeasement's more like, okay, so you're demanding to have this street. We're going to allow you to have this street to make you happy.
Right.
Like, that's what, I mean, that's kind of what, because they're demanding something that's, they're not allowed to have the street.
Right.
They're just not. But the government is allowed to say, yeah, you can have the street. You know what I mean? They can appease them because it's their, quote, their street. I'm doing air quotes here.
Right.
Like, the government controls that. So if the government is allowing, let's say, lawlessness,
right,
then it's kind of, then it kind of is, not right, I guess, right, because they're the ones who,
no, it's not right. It's not right for the government to basically lift up and approve and appease of wrongdoing in order to try to gain standing with a group of lawbreakers.
I
think that's what I'm saying. Like, I have no problem with meeting with, having a sit down, having it be respectful, but explaining like the reality of the situation and the fact that you don't understand. You're not going to come in here and give us demands as you break the law. Excuse me.
Yeah. Right. Because the demands were like abolish the police. It was, you know, take money from them. It was
like,
I forget all the other things.
School district, you know, and we're talking locally here. I don't know what conversations were like outside of our area here. But yeah, I think that's, you know, another quote that I've always latched onto is from this guy, Max Dupree. He was like a businessman.
Okay.
And also an author. And he's like, the first responsibility of a leader is to define reality. The last is to say thank you. In between, the leader is a servant. And we've talked about servant leadership and everything.
Can you read that again? You read that so fast that I literally heard one word in the beginning and one word in the end.
This is what happens when you talk about chicken, cookie, braising chicken. The first responsibility of a leader is to define reality.
Okay.
The last is to say thank you. In between, the leader is a servant.
Okay.
What I like about that quote is that defining reality is just that, Just because you're a servant leader does not mean you do the women fancy of the people you are serving and leading. Okay. You have to define reality to them in certain circumstances and be like, no, we can't do this. And here's the why. Okay.
Or we're not going to do this. And this is why.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. And be respectful of the thank you.
Yeah.
You know, you say thank you and also be a servant to those you lead. So as law enforcement, sometimes, and we are doing this very poorly now, the leaders within law enforcement need to help lead the citizens. And what I mean by that is in instances like this, when you have protesters who are breaking the law, blocking traffic, doing these like protests they're doing on universities right now, those types of things. If you want to meet with those people, the leaders of those groups that are breaking the law, then within that meeting, you be respectful, but explain the reality of the situation. Instead of appeasing and saying, what are your demands? And then listening to all their demands and trying to figure out how to meet their demands. No, we don't meet the demands of people who are breaking the law. You want to come in here and give us demands? That's fine. But those demands, we will do nothing about them as you break the law. What you have to understand right now is that your actions are in violation of this section of the Pennsylvania Crimes Code, this ordinance, whatever. Break it down.
Sure.
And as you continue to do that, you will face consequences for that. That's the reality of the situation. This is not you come in here and demand and tell us what we're going to do. This is us telling you what the law is, how you're in violation of the law, and we will not appease your demands or try to work with you until you stop breaking the law. Then we can, you know, have a conversation about it. But you don't get to just lay out demands as you break the law. That's not how this works, because there's other people here who aren't breaking the law. There's other students here, Jewish students who want to go to school here. You're interrupting graduation. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, traffic flow is being impeded.
Right.
People that want to go here or there.
You're disturbing the peace all night long, like
sure.
that sort of thing. So that's all I'm saying. But we're gonna highlight two things that we've seen in the press recently that kind of you know, bring light to this idea of appeasement and how it's kind of, I think it's one of the main reasons we're seeing this mission drift in law enforcement, because we're trying so hard to appease wrongdoing, evil, sin, in order to gain support from people.
Yeah. So I guess there's a difference between, I guess I'm trying to think this through, because it's not like law enforcement isn't a business, right? So if a business is doing something that people don't like, they can demand they change things, but they're not really breaking any laws, as long as they're not breaking laws,
right,
to get them to change their, like, you know, whatever, child labor in China, you got, you know, whatever, Nike's selling stuff. Maybe they're not. I mean, I'm not calling Nike out, but, like, you know, we've heard that before, right? Like, Nike's, so then people don't stop buying Nike stuff or whatever, and they protest a little bit, or they yell and scream and they get on the axe and go crazy. I guess that's different than if you're, because policing, law enforcement is not a business.
No.
So you're not like, in order to change law, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think this through.
I think what you're saying is, like, law enforcement is different. While we are a arm of the government, and we the people are the government in this country, that doesn't, it's literally like what I just said. As a leader of people, a servant leader, it doesn't mean you just do what everyone wants you to do. So,
sure.
Like, if I'm in charge of a group
of
people,
right,
and all these people come up to me and be like, you're a servant leader, we want you to do this. Well, that's not what that means. I serve you. I try to help you do your job, but I define reality for you. I give you the why we're going to do something the way we're going to do it. And then I do everything in my power to help you do that. You may not even agree with me. You may be someone who works for me and I say, no, we're not going to do that. And this is why we're not going to do it. You don't even have to agree with me. But that doesn't mean I'm then not a servant leader to you.
Sure.
Like, a servant leader just doesn't do the women fancy of the people that he's leading. The same thing for law enforcement. Just because the citizens pay taxes to pay our salary, or we are an arm of government and the government here in this country is by the people, for the people, doesn't mean we then engage in approving of and appeasing people who are breaking the law. Because in reality, our job is to hold the law.
Right.
To keep the law.
So it's almost like people are mad at the wrong entity. Right?
They're mad at the police because the police are then
the
saying,
face of
right, you,
the government.
You can't do this. You can't do this. But I feel like over the last 4 years, that's changed where we've seen the police do a lot more to appease. So perfect example, what we have happening on the universities right now and the level, you know, we have seen some departments, some states really push back and end that. But we still have, we have whole encampments on some of these universities and nothing's being done. They've shut down buildings. They've like keeping Jewish students out. So my question is, if a group of Christians, this is where I'm going. If a group of Christians went onto a university and said, we're taking over this building and would not let Muslim students into that building because we don't believe Islam is true, correct, right. Christianity is the way to salvation through Jesus. And we have this standard and we say Muslim students cannot come in. Do you think that would get shut down in our country right now?
Yes.
Yes, I do. And that's what I'm saying. We're right now, I think within the profession.
Well, let me ask you this, Anthony. Is that law enforcement's fault or is that those who oversee law enforcement?
Well,
because that's the problem.
Right.
I think law enforcement officers will, which sometimes is scary, will do what they're told, which is a scary thing.
Correct.
Will do what they're told almost no matter what, which is, I say that like reluctantly.
Right.
Because I don't think that's true everywhere. But I think that is, well,
yeah.
City government told me to do this. That's all I can do.
I think more people in the profession are waking up to that. I think
more
people in the profession are saying, wait a second, where's my line? Like, and I think COVID kind of opened the eyes of a lot of people in law enforcement where they were like, wait a second, you want us to do this? You want us to stop people who are out driving around
right.
and make sure that they're, you know, have to go to work, that they're like a nurse, a doctor. Like you want us to enforce mask wearing?
It doesn't quite seem right, right? Like there's like
yeah, that. So there were officers who were like, wait a second, something doesn't seem quite right here.
Right.
And I think it kind of opened the eyes of a lot of people in the profession to start asking themselves, okay, yes, I am the enforcement arm of the government to enforce the law, but like where I don't want to be one of these guys that I just do, you know, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing what I'm told. Like, you know, where's my line? And so for you and I to sit here and for me to ask you that question about a Christian group, and I use Christian in air quotes, that shuts down a university and isn't allowing Muslim students in. If we think that would be handled different than how we see people in support of Palestine and Hamas, a terrorist organization,
right,
shutting down schools and not allowing Jewish students into certain areas of that school. And if we think those two scenarios would be treated different as police officers, we believe those two things would be treated different. That is the problem with appeasement, because then you are deciding, okay, I am going to work to help, support, approve of, and try to gain standing with this group over here, but this group over here, I'm going to crush. That is not law enforcement.
Right.
Law enforcement, that supposedly Lady Justice has a blindfold on.
Right.
Okay. And if we aren't supporting that, if we aren't acting in that, then that's a problem. And to your point, which I thought is a really good point.
Thanks, man.
Yes. This is not just a law enforcement problem. This is a government
right.
problem. This is like high level government problem. But again, within law enforcement, these agencies, these leaders, these high level leaders within law enforcement need to push back against that.
Yeah.
And need to say, no, no, no. If you want me to do this in this scenario, but you don't want me to do it in this scenario, why are we playing favorites? That's not law enforcement.
Right.
You know, the same thing with, you know, these departments having pride cars. You know, we're coming up on the month of June. It's Pride Month, and they're going to unveil, these departments are going to unveil pride cars. Absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. You wouldn't unveil a pro-life car.
Right.
You wouldn't unveil a anything conservative valued. You wouldn't unveil that on a car. So why are we appeasing this group of people? You know, you don't appease Christians. You don't appease pro-life people. You don't appease sanctity of marriage people.
Right.
You know, that's a problem.
Homeschoolers.
Like if you're looking to approve of and appease a certain group of people, that's a problem. And especially if you're in law enforcement.
Let's look at one of these cases. That's super good, dude.
Can I just say one thing?
Dude, it's your podcast, man. Say what
you
want.
It's not. It's our podcast. It was interesting to me. You said 2020 was when you first noticed it. I actually noticed this. It was between 2001 and 2005, 2004. I don't remember the year. And I wouldn't have been able to say appeasement or I feel like we're just trying to appease someone.
Yeah.
But it was a moment where a supervisor came up to me and said, we had a lady call in and send us an email, call in or send an email, I'm not sure. And she's expressed that she hasn't seen a police officer for quite a while on her block. Would you stop out, knock on her door and talk to her? And I remember the supervisor telling me this, and I don't remember if I pushed back at all. I probably did because I was young and dumb and, you know, just full of piss and vinegar. But I was like, why it's not my job to go knock on a lady's door who hasn't seen a cop in her block and appease her and make her feel good about whatever herself. I mean, when I was growing up, and I'm sure you would feel the same way, there was no community meetings with police officers. Like, I didn't want to have interaction with the police. If I was having interaction with the police, that meant I was doing something wrong. But something has changed over the years where we have sought to just try our very best to appease the public. So in other words, if some lady calls in and says, I haven't seen the police in 2 weeks, my first response to that lady would be, well, ma'am, have you been at your window 24 hours a day for the last 14 days? To see if police have been in your block.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't automatically go like, oh, you're right. You know what? We'll send an officer out to talk to you. What? Like, that's insane to me. Like, that's where the defining reality needs to come into play, where we need to say, I'm sorry you feel that way, ma'am. But our officers do not make house calls. If you have a problem, call 911. I can assure you there have been officers patrolling in your area. In fact, I just pulled up a bunch of reports of arrests that have been made within one block area of your house. Or we did a traffic detail there. You know, that's what I'm talking about. This bending over backwards to try to appease people and whatever their whim and fancy is. Like, we need to be able to define reality. I mean, people call us and be like, my kid doesn't go to school. A supervisor should get on the radio and be like, county, you know, we're not responding to that. Dispatch, we're not responding to that. That is not a police matter. That's like the defining reality. But we've like sought to appease, like people call the police for everything. You're shaking your head like you might agree with me. I might not.
I just want to talk about these other things.
Okay. So the first one we're going to talk about, the Denver illegal encampment.
The reason I'm saying that, it doesn't, like, go say hi to the lady. Who cares?
Like, but that's the problem, Gary.
It's not a problem. Go say hi to the lady. It doesn't matter.
But that's what we've created now. We've created a group of people who believe that that is what policing
You're
is.
You're so against, like, police officers saying hi to people or, like, hanging out with them.
I'm absolutely not.
Or, like,
that is.
And I know you literally hung out with people last night.
Exactly.
The community.
I
but
did
like
an
you
event
come across
night.
So strong that like we've that was the slow spiral down. To where we are now, where we're letting whatever happen.
I think it started in the early 2000s. That's when I'm saying that's when I first noticed that there was something not quite right. Because I'm like, if people can call the police department, say, I haven't seen an officer for however many days, and a supervisor comes up to a police officer who is active, aggressive, trying to get into things, trying to interact with the criminal element, and tell that officer, hey, I don't really want you to do law enforcement right now. I want you to go appease a woman. That's a problem.
I would just disagree, dude. It's not, like, to me, it's not that big of a deal, especially if it's an old lady.
It's,
like,
listen,
let's go talk to her, man.
It's not that, I'm not saying it's a big deal. I'm saying that was the slow drip. That was a slow drip away from.
So you're saying it's more about what that supervisor, instead of him just saying, like, why would he assign you to that? Why wouldn't he take care of that?
Correct.
You know what I mean? So, okay, like, if he wants to do that, yeah, but you're directing someone to stop doing law enforcement activities to go do something that's different. Is that what you're saying?
And right now, we're killing guys out there. We have cops who want to, excuse me, be involved and engage with the criminal element.
But they can't because they have to do all these other things.
Because they have to go to all these community meetings, and we want you to go coffee with a cop. Coffee with a cop didn't start till 2011. It started with a woman. We needed to appease a woman in her neighborhood to coffee with a cop.
Yeah.
I'm not against coffee with a cop. I've gone to coffee with a cop.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But when you start mandating officers who want to go out and do their job and enforce the law and telling them, hey, we want you to go to this community event and appease a bunch of people that already like you, that already think you're great, and drink coffee with them and make small talk, you're killing guys.
Yeah, but law enforcement isn't just going after the bad guy. It's not just that.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
But there are officers who are doing it organically every single
day. Right. That's what makes a good cop.
Right.
Literally going after the bad guy. And if he has a moment, he's waving at the kids playing in the playground because he likes them. He genuinely wants them to be safe. So he's waving at them. It's organic. It's real. It's not forced. It's not forced. It's who that police officer is because he's a good cop.
Right.
He wants his community to be safe. So he goes after the bad guy. Helps the old lady across the street, stops traffic. Like, he does all the things that everybody wants him to do because he's a good cop.
Right. It's also different than a community event not put on by the police, just a community event, and be like, hey, we'd like a cruiser out there. There's going to be a lot of kids there. Let them sit in your car, talk to them. Yeah, sure. I get that. Like, I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm not against that.
I'm glad you're saying
that. Like, I
think
people think I'm against that stuff. I'm not against that. I've engaged in that stuff. What I'm against is this idea that we have to appease every single person with, again,
every single time.
A small thing you're for saying, a woman to say, I haven't seen the police. And, you know, but why are we then taking an officer off the street to go talk to that woman to make her feel better about herself because she's talked to a police officer because she's seen one?
Yeah, you're saying appeasement every single time for every situation.
Right.
Unless it involves some type of view. One view or another.
Yeah, and correct. I mean, that type of appeasement, you're not appeasing law breaking or sin. You're just appeasing something that may not be our full mission.
Yeah.
May not be our full mission. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Denver illegal encampment. So this story came out of Denver. I looked just before we hopped on the mics here. I looked to see if there was an update on this story. I couldn't find one. But basically, there's an illegal encampment of illegal aliens in Denver. It's on private property, and they're refusing to leave without demands being met.
Private property.
It's like private property, like I think a gas company or a company owns this property that they're encamping on. So again, you have illegal aliens.
Okay.
They've come to the country illegally.
Yep.
They're now engaged in illegally trespassing on private property.
Okay.
Okay. And they're refusing to leave without their demands being met.
Ooh, they're demanding things.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is a story out of New York Post. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, this link was in that email. And there was also a Florida Now 1X account that I follow that I saw this on. So a little background on this. The mayor of Denver is Mayor Mike Johnston, and he has a history of appeasing law-breaking illegal aliens, okay? So this that's the thing. Like, this type of thing doesn't just happen at, like, boom, all of a sudden you have illegals in, like, doing trespassing on, it has to start somewhere. So Denver has been like, come all you illegal aliens, come to our land. And so they have, and this year they cut $5 million from public services to provide shelter, healthcare, schooling, et cetera, to nearly 40,000 illegals that have come into the city.
$5 million.
Just wait.
Okay.
$5 million for 40,000 illegals. Okay. That's this year. In addition, they diverted $25 million from other budget line items to help with the problem. So they have their city budget. They cut $5 million from public services, and then another $25 million diverted from other budget line items.
So $30 million.
Maybe that $5 million is included in the 25 to $30 million.
Sure.
Has been reallocated, cut, whatever.
Drop in the bucket.
But there's more. In addition to that, he's cutting another $8.4 million from the police department to aid illegals to help a $90 million fund package to deal with the illegals. Okay? So here's a mayor who is appeasing the breaking of the law. By his actions, he's approving of the breaking of the law, that being illegally entering our country. Okay? And he's appeasing it and approving of it by saying, come to our city. We want you here.
How does a governor have, or a, what is he, a mayor? How does a mayor have that much control?
Well, he's the mayor of the city.
Yeah, but I don't know how city government works. That seems a little bit like too much power.
Fox reported that this will hinder Denver PD's ability to hire for open positions. Mayor Johnston claiming it will not impact public safety. And here's the chief of PD, Ron Thomas.
Again, all right, Ron, let's hear it, Ron.
Horrible leadership, assuring citizens, saying they need to be partners in this. We need to be partners in this. Certainly happy we found a pathway to help these migrants that are coming into the city. So here you have the chief of the police department in Denver saying, we're glad to have reached a pathway to help people who are breaking the law.
Right.
Okay. That's basically what he's saying.
They would call them asylum seekers, though, right?
You can call them whatever you want.
I'm just saying.
You are broaching our border illegally and coming into the country illegally, you have engaged in a crime, a federal crime.
Yeah.
Okay. And you now have leaders of police departments working to help these people, to help people who are engaged in illegal activity. You know, hey, we're going to cut police department spending.
Right.
In order to,
we're going to partner up. We're all going to do this together.
Right. So what has this gained? Well, let's go to this illegal encampment now. Okay. So we're approving of. Now we have this illegal encampment and we have law-abiding business saying, hey, these people are trespassing on our land.
Right.
Okay. What's going to be done about this? So now, the mayor down through city government, the police are like, you guys can't be on this land. We've just told you, come. We've welcomed you. We've taken all this money to support you. But now we're telling the petulant child, you can't trespass.
Right.
And what do these illegal immigrants do? They say, no, we're not leaving. In fact, we have 13 demands for you.
Whoa. All
13 right. demands. Okay.
Tell me them.
So migrants, these are the demands. Migrants will cook their own food with fresh, culturally appropriate ingredients provided by the city instead of pre-made meals, rice, chicken, flour, oil, butter, tomatoes, onions, etc. All people will not be punished for bringing in and eating outside food. The city's already providing them food.
Okay.
Not
pre-packaged food.
It's prepackaged food. Not good enough. You will provide us culturally appropriate ingredients.
Okay.
And you will pay for them. Okay. That's number one. Number two, shower access will be available without time limits.
Yo, I want to take a long shower.
My daughter would love this without time limits. We got time limits on this. And can be accessed whenever. We are not in the military. We are civilians. No, you are illegal aliens. You shouldn't even be here.
What's the next one?
Medical professionals visits will happen regularly and referrals connections for specialty care will be made as needed.
Who pays for that?
The city. The city funded.
So they're demanding the city pay for more.
Yep. All
right.
All will receive the same housing support that has been offered to others. They cannot kick people out in 30 days without something stable established. There needs to be clear, just process before exiting someone for any reason, including verbal, written, and final warnings. Okay. Again, I don't.
So they must have said you have 30 days or they must have given some type of...
Maybe.
You're allowed to stay there 30 days, then you got to leave or something.
You got to leave.
It's weird.
All shelter residents will receive connection to employment support, including work permit applications for those who qualify. I guess because the city is saying, hey, you can move into the shelter. Like, you can come. We have shelters. Like, come stay at the shelter. No. Consultations for each person family with a free immigration lawyer.
Yeah.
Must be arranged to discuss, progress their cases, and then the city will provide ongoing legal support to the form of immigration document clinics and including transportation to relevant court dates. Can I just say, if you are a legal citizen, like you are a legal immigrant, you've come to the great country of the United States, and you've gone through the process to become a citizen of this country, I cannot imagine how you would feel and must feel to read garbage like this.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah. Or just think of all of the citizens who have to pay their own legal fees for all types of things.
Right.
Custody, all the stuff that people are going through. And even legal fees.
Right.
Like, and you're paying for that. And these people are demanding the government pay for their legal.
When they're engaged in doing illegal things. Like, it's wild to me.
Yeah.
The city will provide privacy for families, individuals within the shelter. I don't really know what that means. I mean, maybe it's a big room. I don't know. No more verbal or physical or mental abuse will be permitted from the staff, including no sheriff sleeping inside and monitoring 24/7. This would be in the shelter. We are not criminals and won't be treated as such. Actually, you are.
Yeah, you are.
You
right.
can't. I just, and a sheriff sleeping in there like is verbal, physical, mental abuse, whatever. Transportation for all children to and from their schools would be provided until they finish in 3 weeks. So this was early May. No separating families, regardless of if family members have children or not. The camp will stay together. So they want this whole encampment to go to the same place. City must schedule a meeting with the mayor and those directly involved in running the newcomer program. I don't know what the newcomer program is. ASAP to discuss further improvements and ways to support migrants. And number 13, the city must provide all residents with a document signed by a city official in English and Spanish with all of these demands that includes a number to call to report mistreatment.
Wow. Who wrote it? Do we know, is there any background, like who actually wrote it?
My understanding is a lawyer paid for, I believe, by the city, met with these migrants and wrote it on their behalf.
There's that. Is it a proverb? You reap what you sow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yeah. proverb?
Mm-hmm.
I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's more like a life lesson type thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like they're getting what they've asked for.
Right.
And maybe they like this. Like maybe the people of Denver are like, yeah, this is great. And if that's the case,
right.
That's the case. But I would imagine, I mean, vote them out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and maybe they will. It's just not sustainable. I mean, I'm all about people coming to this country legally, and I understand asylum seekers and wanting to help asylum seekers. But that's, yeah. I mean, Gary, you and I have talked about in previous episode the border problem and the millions and millions and millions of people that are coming across every single day. If you're on X, you see a news story about an illegal immigrant here who's committed heinous crimes, rape, yep. murder. We have a problem at our border. And when you come across the border illegally, and if we welcome that and we say that's okay, this is what we end up with. It's not sustainable.
It's not even saying that's okay. It's supporting it. It's giving you funds and resources to...
It's an approval of.
Right. It's approval of.
Yeah.
It's appeasement.
Right. And so then we have this mess. And like you and I said, recently I heard there's a Christian podcast, Ruslan. I don't know if you've ever heard him.
No.
And he used the word weaponized empathy. And okay. I thought it's so clearly something that I've been trying to put into words for a long time. He did it in a moment. Weaponized empathy. That is what the far left uses. It's this idea that we need to help these people, and they weaponize it into making everyone else feel guilty if you're not willing to help. And the role of government in any country ultimately is to protect its citizens.
Right.
And when you're saying, I approve of you coming into this country illegally, I'm showing you appeasement, I'm offering you goods and services and free things to do it when you get here, like, it's not sustainable.
Yeah. This isn't hard. To me, this doesn't seem hard, but I'm not that smart of a guy. And if you reward bad behavior, the result is more bad behavior.
Exactly.
Like, it's not, like, that's not hard. Like, you see that in children.
Right.
And schools aren't okay with this, right?
Right.
You don't reward bad behavior even in school, hopefully.
Right.
Otherwise, it's chaos.
Right.
And that's true of, that's on a micro scale of, like, in a family.
Right.
if your dog misbehaves and you give him treats because he disobeyed, his behavior is going to continue to get worse. Like, it's just reality. It's truth. It's just what happens. So if you're going to reward bad behavior in Denver by these people coming that you've welcomed, so you rewarded them by moving them from one area of the country to Denver, which Denver's not real close to a border, is it?
No, Denver,
Colorado. So they got there somehow.
Landlocked.
It's landlocked. I mean, I'm not geography major, but like I thought that to be true. So you ship them to your city. So you've rewarded them by Denver's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a beautiful place. So you rewarded them there, and then you've given them services. You give them a plot of land somehow because you haven't booted them out. So you're constantly rewarding bad behavior, and this is the result. You're going to continue to get bad behavior.
Well, and you brought up the idea of children. I mean, it is a simple concept. I mean, if you have a child who is exhibiting bad behavior, if you appease that bad behavior, so let's say every time you go to Target with your child, your kid throws a temper tantrum to get something. And to make them stop, you just give that to them.
Or you give them a lollipop.
Right. You just give them
something.
To
keep them quiet. And then you buy that thing that they wanted anyway. Right. And you give it to them.
Mm-hmm. And then they get to be around like 11, 12 years old, and their actions and what they're doing are becoming more and more outrageous. And you're like, oh, I need to crack down on this. How well do you think that's going to go?
It's not
to crack down when you've showed them their whole life, you've appeased and approved a bad behavior. Now all of a sudden their bad behavior is getting really bad.
Yeah.
And you try to crack down on it. That is this right here, migrant situation right here. You just like you said, come, we'll give you free things. We'll support you fully. The city will give you millions of dollars to help you with food, comfort, you know, whatever you need.
Yeah.
It will not work.
If I was in Denver, I wouldn't vote for this guy.
Yeah. I don't know when he's up for re-election, but
listen, in reality, that's on Denver. Like, I mean, think about it. That's on the citizenship of Denver. You've chosen this guy. You as the people have chosen this guy, and you're not holding him accountable if you disagree with this. And maybe they agree with this and it's not that big of a deal. If I lived in Denver, I would not be excited about this.
Right.
I'd be upset.
Right. Yeah.
But if I protest and go crazy, guess what's going to happen? I'm getting crushed, probably.
Yeah.
Because he's in charge. So then it's this like weird. Yeah. It's this weird thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's the favorite plane.
Yeah. Whoever's in power has the.
What are we going? But it shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be that way, but it is.
The leadership of the government leadership should be looking to support and take care of and protect their citizens.
Yep.
Their law-abiding citizens.
Yep. The law keepers, and then crush the lawbreakers.
Yeah.
Dude, it's what we say all of the time.
All the time. But this, yeah. All right. Second one. This is about men infiltrating women's prisons by going trans or claiming that they're now women.
Oh boy.
So
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Is this in California?
Yes, but I think there's another state has done this too. I'm not going to say what state I think it is because I don't want to misstate it, but I think there's another state.
I bet it's not Florida.
Done this.
It's I bet not it's Florida. Not Texas.
No, I think it's a New England state that has done it. So, anyways, Riley Gaines, maybe you're familiar with me or not, on X, I initially saw this. She put out a clip from a documentary. So the Independent Women's Forum, which is, I'm sure, you know, not something I would normally follow or, you know, but they did a documentary series and it's available on YouTube. Each episode's like 8 minutes long, 10 minutes
short.
Long. Yeah, it's real short. And it's called Cruel and Unusual Punishment. So the one that I saw was from a guard. So basically, this is what is happening. Transgender inmates are being placed in housing in prison facilities based on their gender identity. Okay. So in 2021, this law passed in the state of California that does not require inmates to get gender affirming surgeries. They just have to say, I'm now a woman. So it's how they identify. They don't even need to go and get a gender affirming surgery to get moved. If they say, I identify as a woman, they are being moved to female prisons with their full genitalia intact.
Okay.
So males are getting transferred. This law that passed was known as the Transgender Respect, Agency, and Dignity Law. So obviously, maybe not obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say.
This has created a huge problem in the prison system in California that nobody wants to talk about. So Independent Women's Forum did this documentary series to try to bring light to the evil that this is producing within the women's prisons in California. And what I don't understand is why the people, the legislators who are behind these laws, the leadership in the prison system who don't fight against this, how they can't see what this would create.
They should be able to, because a criminal is a criminal is a criminal.
Right.
Okay. Criminals are going to do criminal things until they're reformed.
Right.
Right. A criminal is going to take advantage of every situation they possibly can.
Right. Absolutely.
And this is, I imagine you're going somewhere with this in that, let me guess, a male wants to be in a female prison so he can do what he wants.
Right.
Or he wants to show his genitalia off to a prison guard. So he's going to be like, I'm going to dominate this woman prison guard by making her look at me, by searching me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's terrible.
Because they're criminals.
Yeah. And did you watch all the documentary series on this, or did you just watch the one with the guard?
Just the one with the guard.
Okay. I thought that was one of the most powerful ones, but they also interviewed several female past inmates and a current inmate by phone. And I got to tell you, it is such evil stuff. It is unbelievably evil.
Yeah.
And I mean, you just have, exactly like you said, why would a man want to go to a female prison?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah. And the thing is, they don't even need to, there's no way to vet these guys because they don't need to, they're going based on their feeling. They don't need gender affirming surgery. They don't need actual evidence that they're now a female.
You're doing big giant air quotes, like, evidence. Yeah.
You know, they don't need to, like, you know, basically have their penis chopped off and have a vagina put it. Like, they can just be like,
dude, it's so crazy that you just said that.
Dude, I
have his penis chopped off and give him a vagina. Like, that's not how this works, man. That's sad that we're laughing at this.
But no, that's
sick.
No, that's the gender affirming surgery. That's what they're doing to these males to turn them into females. And
but they're not demanding that they do that.
Correct. They don't even need to have that done to be transferred to a female prison. So you have fully male body parts on a male who's like, I feel like a woman, and is going to these prisons. Some of them are even like starting to dress a certain way, put lipstick on everything, and then they get to the women's prison, and then they like change, and they're like, you know, they're not dressing like a woman anymore, and they have girlfriends, and they're getting, you know, other prisoners pregnant, and they're assaulting people.
Are there reports of sexual assault within these women prisons?
Yeah. So like this guard was a lieutenant. This was the one documentary. Guard was a lieutenant for one of these prisons. And I think he had like 16 or 17 years on. He was, you know, 10, 12 years to a pension, making a great salary. And he's like, I'm out. Like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So good on him. Like, he was pushing back and nothing was happening. But some of his quotes from the documentary, he's like, the males were like kids in a candy store as we transferred them to women's facilities.
Like celebrating.
Celebrating. Thing. He's like, we were told to prioritize proper pronouns when we had real issues in the prison. So they were having like these classes and being like, you will refer to prisoners with their proper pronouns.
So they probably have fights and they're dealing with like, you know, people bringing drugs into the prison. They're dealing with all of these issues, but let's make sure that we use he, she, they, them,
right?
All of the,
based on how a person identifies. And if you don't, you will be punished. He talked about, like, you brought up male inmates demanding they be searched by female guards during strip searches because they identify as a female. So I want a female guard strip searching me.
Let me tell you something. That is a power grab. Like, you want to talk about a male abusing, like mentally abusing a woman?
Yes.
That is a great way to do that.
Yes.
Like, demand that they watch you, search you while you're standing there naked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is so, like,
it's evil.
Textbook, I'm dominating you.
Yep.
Like, yes. If you're a woman out there and you had to deal with that, like, that's wicked. That's terrible.
He talks about another male inmate who was scheduled for a sex change surgery in Beverly Hills because he got top of the line.
Okay.
This is paid by taxpayers.
Unreal.
To go to Beverly Hills to get his check saying, check sex change surgery. Jeez.
That hurt.
And he was bragging and saying when he came back, he was going to prostitute himself on the prison yard because he was going to get a sex change surgery to female. And then he was going to prostitute himself on the prison yard for make money.
Yeah. Criminals do criminal things, right?
And then he
take advantage of others. That's
right.
What a criminal does.
Then he had a problem with the surgery. The surgery didn't go well.
Oh, no.
Okay. So then he turned around and he sued the state.
Yeah.
State settled with him.
Of course.
Okay. So state paid for him to go get a sex change surgery.
Right?
He's bragging that he's going to prostitute himself as a female now on the male prison yard. Sex change surgery doesn't go well. Now the state pays him because of, I mean, this
terrible.
Is evil stuff. And I think one of the best things the guard talked about was, he's like, listen, our mission as guards is to protect the inmates.
Sure.
And he's like, that's being decimated. If you're purposefully putting predators into women's prisons, you are abdicating your role as a guard.
Sure.
You know, and he left, he spoke up in the prison, finally was like, I can't participate in this. Left, and now he's like being pretty vocal out against this, which good for him. And shame on the leader. I don't care if you voted for this. Like, I do. I care if you voted for people to be in place for this. And okay, high level government makes this law. But shame on the leadership of these prisons. Like, how can you be in charge of a prison and be like, I'm okay with this?
Yeah.
I'm just doing my job. And that's where.
Yeah. It's like head in the sand, right? Like what's that picture of the ostrich, right? Just head in the sand.
Yeah. One former female inmate said she was forced to share 8-person cell with a male inmate who is alleged devil worshiper and found guilty of second degree murder. A former female inmate who's now founded a non-profit organization to assist women in prison says she was like, this isn't a political issue. She's like, everyone wants to make this a political issue. It's a human rights issue. And when it comes to males being in female prisons, it has nothing to do with politics. This is a human rights issue for women. And she was starting to reach out to other people and trying to gain support for her nonprofit. And she was told by these organizations, just be careful. These places don't want to jump on because it's made into a political issue.
Right.
They're like, make sure you're using the right terminology, you know?
Yeah.
And
the right thing. You have to say it the right way or else you're going to lose support or you're going to be labeled a certain thing.
She said she's hardly getting any help from women's rights organizations because they don't want to touch it. They don't want to touch it.
Because the women's rights organizations are like, are they hugging the trans movement?
Yes.
Is that what?
Yes. Ooh. Yeah. They don't want to, they want to appease that movement because that movement right now is gaining a lot of steam, a lot of power.
Let me ask you this, Anthony, is there women's groups out there that are pushing back on this that you know of?
I think there's more now. I think there's starting to be a turn.
Because this has to be supported by men if this is wrong,
right?
Or if this is like an issue, if that is the case. But it has to be like forefront by women.
Yeah, I mean.
But I think, so this might get me in trouble, right? Because like, I think men are to protect women. That's
yes.
The role of a man.
Yeah.
But women are super strong and they should be able to push back on something that they don't like.
Right.
And just have some support by men.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think men should be all on board in this if that's what they think. But like. Women should also.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's wild is like, so the feminist movement, okay? The feminist movement moved us away from standard roles with men and women. The feminist movement
yeah.
moved us yep. Wait, from like you go back 100 years, the roles of men and women were considered different than they are now.
And they were kind of like a norm. It was a cultural norm, at least in the United States.
And I think it was more of a norm and a standard, again, biblically. Like, sure. I think there's a biblical standard for roles of men and women in the home.
I think that was abused back then, for sure.
For sure. There's always abuse.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's the hearts of men are set on evil. But the feminist movement blurred the lines with those roles, okay? And now on the back end, the consequences of that are where we're at right now.
Yeah, so it's pushed so far.
It's pushed so far that now the trans movement is like literally like pendulum is swinging around.
Like it's going up.
Back to hit them in the rear end because they once you move away from a standard, perversity only follows. Like once you move away from a standard, it's not like you take incremental steps towards perversity. When we were talking about sexual ethics, I'm talking specifically in this about sexual ethics.
Okay.
Like if we believe there's a standard, okay? So you and I, Gary, would believe that the standard is God created a male and a female, and that sex was created by God between one man and one woman in the sanctity of marriage. Okay. That would be our standard, okay? So anything outside of that standard is sin and perversity, okay? We live in a culture where I think people are like, you know, you're not like, okay, we got closer to outside the standard. We took the next step away from the standard. No, as soon as you step outside that standard, you're in perversity. You're in sin based on the standard that we believe biblically stands. And so the feminists did that. They took like the role of men and women. They stepped out of the standard and pushed back against that standard. And now it's like full on bore perversity that they kind of started the creation of. And now it's coming back to bite them in the rear end.
Yeah.
So like this forum that created this documentary series, that's a feminist organization.
Okay.
So they're pushing back against it. They're saying, wait a second. This isn't protecting women.
It's actually hurting us.
It's actually hurting women. And so I think you will have more feminist organizations jumping on it, but I think a lot of them are afraid because the trans movement has so much power right now.
Do you think the trans movement has power because it's men? Like for the most part, it is a male dominated. Maybe I'm an idiot.
The trans movement has power because, you know, many have been handed over to their sin. I think it has power because people are so spiritually blinded to the standard, they will engage in all types of perversity.
But listen, what I'm saying is this.
Yeah,
throughout all of history, man has been like the dominant one.
Okay.
The power.
Yeah.
For the most part. And this I'm speaking in generalities here. And I'm not saying this is good or bad. I'm just saying in general, the man has been whatever a man is.
The conqueror, the
actual man, yeah,
you know, the one who goes out and takes the hill.
Yeah, exactly. The man has dominated everything, and in this might be maybe somebody can educate me, but the trans movement is basically men wanting to be women,
correct?
More than women wanting to be men, right? Like it's like
I don't know the percentages. I believe you're right. I think the percentages are many more men wanting to identify as women.
Well, that's why you like the drag shows or the
correct.
And I guess that's different, but it's kind of the same thing, right? I'm not super educated on this stuff, but
yeah. Yeah, it's
men, I don't know what I'm saying is
dressing
like,
up as women.
So like this thing has a big following or support because it's men. For the most part, it's men. So like once again, we're like elevating men.
Well, and I think that's the thing. I mean, look at it.
No one would say that. No one's going to say that. And I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that. But like it seems. And we're just riffing here.
Right. But you're absolutely right. That's the, like, look at women's sports.
Yeah.
Men are taking over women's sports.
Yeah. You're not seeing women become wrestlers and dominating the sport. You're seeing men wanting to dominate women.
Right.
In their power, like hungry grabs.
Right.
Sin.
Yeah.
Which is sin. Right.
And we're allowing it.
And we're like celebrating it, supporting it, affirming it, all of the things.
Right.
And we're elevating that to be a thing and just.
Right.
It's wild, man.
So,
like it's
so, yeah. And then now this is over in the prison system,
right?
You know, and the men are doing the same thing, but they have criminal intent with it,
Because they're criminals.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're
they're manipulating the system for sure. And this is different than like outside in the world to some extent. You know right. what I mean? Like we're talking specifically in the prison system.
Right.
Criminals are going to find a way to right. do criminal things. Yeah. And this is another way that they're doing this, which is, it's sickening. Right.
But I think it's a microcosm of sure. what's happening out in the culture 100%. Where we have men going into women's bathrooms,
100%.
Exposing themselves to yeah. people, to women, to girls.
Sure.
Wanting to, in high school, be in a women's changing room, like students. Like it's happening out in our world as well.
Yeah. I'm just here to like we are to, this is going to sound like, what's the word? Like sexist or whatever. Okay. But like men are supposed to support and protect the weak.
Correct.
To include women and children and weaker men. Right. If you're like a man with some type of like protecting instinct, you are to follow after that.
Right.
Right. You shouldn't be suppressing that. Right.
Right.
So like, I don't know, man, like I think we got to do a better job as men to help women. But I'm not saying that they're helpless.
Right.
I'm just saying like, no. like they're super strong and they do great things and we're right. all in this together. Like we I want a society and culture that is flourishing, and it's not flourishing when we're confused and appeasing everyone for everything. There has to be some standard somewhere. There has to be. And we've gone so far left or right. Like, I don't mean like culture, like politically. I just right. mean, we've gone so far in either direction or in all directions that like there's no standard anymore that we can protect.
Right.
And you have to, I think at some point you have to push back and be in it together, right? Like men and women both pushing back at this narrative that like you can be anything you want and there's no consequences.
Right.
Like just do all the things.
And I think that is why the Christian tradition is so awesome to me, because there is a standard.
Yeah.
And we can open a book and have a standard. I think the level of confusion, if you're outside of Christianity and you just want to be a good person, air quotes, a good person, and treat people right, this empathy, this weaponized empathy, is being used to push people farther away from the standard and saying, no, if you want to be a kind person, if you want to be a good person, then you support people, you appease people, you approve of people doing however they wish.
Yeah. And I don't think it's on purpose. It's just a natural result. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't think it's on purpose for some people.
Sure. For the criminal, it is.
Correct.
For the criminal, we're seeing in the prison. That's what that story right. is important about, because a criminal is going to do criminal things because that's what they do.
And for some in high levels of leadership, it's on purpose.
For sure. For sure. But what I'm saying, it's a natural consequence of falling outside of the standard. And that's true of any standard that is there. You and I are saying that the standard comes from the Creator himself.
Correct.
And he's documented that standard in the Word of God.
Correct. And if you don't believe that, but you have a standard, so if you have
it's your own standard, or it's someone else's standard, or it's one you made up yourself. We have an objective one that we're looking at.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, if you have a standard in your mind, but you don't believe in the Creator and his book, the Bible, then you need to ask yourself, where did your standard come from?
Yeah, it's your own, or it's from someone else. It's borrowed.
Right.
It's whatever it is. And now listen, Christians get standard wrong sometimes.
For sure.
For sure. And that's why we have to...
Because we're broken people.
Yeah. And we just keep looking into things and trying to align ourselves more and more with what the book says, what the right. good book says. And we fail miserably all of the time.
Right. But
we have a standard. We at we least have a standard.
Right.
And right now there's no standard in the world. There's no standard. Actually, that's not true. Like in the world, there are standards, but like in the United States, it seems like there is not a standard for many things.
No,
it's just not a standard.
Do as you please.
Yeah.
Decide as you please.
Yeah. Whatever a man wants, he goes after. Like that's. You know what I mean? Like that's,
right.
if you want it, you go after it. And that's what we're seeing. And then now we're seeing the consequences of that, which some people are supporting and affirming and think is a great thing. I just don't think it is.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
And a woman being abused, as a prison guard or as an inmate by a man is not okay. And I'm not okay with it.
Right.
So that's what I'm specifically talking about. I'm not okay with that.
Right. And it's because we've stepped away from the standard. We've decided there is no standard.
Right.
You know, and when I say we, like our culture has decided there is no standard.
Right.
That you can do as you please.
At least in some places.
Yeah. And as when you take that step, you know, outside of God's standard, you're already like you're already on the side of perversity. You're not.
Yeah, it only gets worse.
It only gets worse, right. Like because you only keep stepping away from that standard. So, when I was doing this episode prep, and one thing I sent to you was out of Romans 1.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just want to read that real quick because I think it relates, especially to this last topic we talked about, it within the prison system, and the sexual perversity that we've seen happen in the prison system based on. How people identify. It just made me think of Romans 1:26. It says, "For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind, to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they knew God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them." And that last verse there, I just continually thought about as we prep for this episode, is that our leaders are giving approval to, are appeasing evil and sinfulness. And, you know, but for the grace of God, there go I. You know, I read down all, over all these sins and all these evilness, and I'm like, but for the grace of God, there go I. Like those are sins in my own life.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's interesting that it starts off real and everybody gets real offended about those first couple of verses, but we are all that.
Yeah.
Envy, strife, mm-hmm. malice.
Yeah.
Disobedient children. We've all been that.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So like.
But it's a standard.
It is a standard.
And like I said before, you know, our standard, our is based on a biblical standard, God's standard, our creator's standard, when it comes to human sexuality and God's creation and role for it. Yeah. And as soon as you step outside of that, you, like you said, it only gets worse.
Right.
It only gets worse.
Right.
And that's where we find ourselves. But the thing, I love Romans 1. Romans 1, I think is so, you read that and you're like, man, that is kind of depressing.
It kind of hurts.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about Romans 1, before Paul writes all that, he gives the hope in verse 16. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith." And that's why I said, but for the grace of God, there go I, for those verses that list all those sins, you know, the righteous shall live by faith, by grace, through faith in Jesus Christ. I mean, that is the hope that we have.
Yep.
And really, that's, you know, when we talk about this, the approval of sin, the appeasement of sin, we're talking about it, yes, within law enforcement, we're also talking about it within our culture. There is only one way to get away from that. There is only one way to get away from that. And his name is Jesus. And so when I talk passionately about these things, like when I was looking, especially this prison stuff, I was like super incensed by it. I'm like, how can we as a country be allowing this? How can we, you know, if you're a believer and you've taken what you think is one small step out of that standard, you're either on the side of the standard or you're not on the side of the standard. And as believers, like that is the thing that causes me the most anguish is when I see believers, people who claim to be believers, okay, step outside of that standard and say, well, you know, the LGBTQ, that's okay. You know, no, it's not okay. That's not the standard. And so you take one incremental step outside. It doesn't mean we hate those people. It doesn't mean we don't care for those people. It doesn't mean that we're not kind to those people, but we do not approve of, and we do not appease their sin. We do not approve of their sin. As believers, we cannot approve of that sin, because if we approve of that sin, then it's only one more step to approve of the trans movement and that sin. And then we see what we have happening in our prison system. We see what's happening in our culture. And like, we have to hold the standard. We have to hold the whole word of God. So I don't know. I just, this episode was real heavy on me leading up to it. I feel like this idea of appeasement and approval within law enforcement is a huge, huge issue. Because I think as we look out over the country, it appears, and maybe it's the wrong appearance, but I don't believe so. It appears that we as a profession are starting to approve and appease one side. And we are not keeping a blindfold on and just enacting justice level across the board when it comes to the law. We are picking and choosing what we approve of and what we appease of. And
that's dangerous.
It's super, super dangerous. It's super dangerous. And we need to decide, you know, how are we as individuals going to stand up against that? If you're a police officer, like, where's your line? You need to start thinking critically about these things and deciding, you know, what am I okay doing and what am I not okay doing? What am I okay enforcing? What am I not okay enforcing? I never thought we'd get to that point. I never in my wildest dreams would think that I would be voicing something like this.
Right. Right. And this is why I think local elections are super important.
Super important.
I think they're more important than all elections are important.
Right.
Who we put into power is important. And we have the great privilege in this country to vote people in and out.
Right.
And if we can, and if you voted someone in and they're not doing well, like, maybe you can battle to remove them,
right,
to have them removed, you know,
right,
lawfully.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's good stewardship. I always cringe when I'm around people who are like, you know, what's my vote matter? Well, the problem is your one little vote isn't going to turn the tide. But when you have a million people saying that, it does turn the tide.
Yep.
You know, and it's poor stewardship. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing. Are you being a good steward of the government that you've been afforded the privilege to vote.
It's like,
right,
a get to thing. Like,
right,
you get to have a say in who you put in the school board.
Right.
Right. Who's going to help your kids? Like,
yes.
What are they going to put in? What books are they going to put in? Like,
right,
you know, what curriculum are they going to choose?
Right.
What are they going to ignore that's happening in other places?
Correct.
So it's a school board is super important. Your local municipality is important.
Right.
Vote.
All the way up to national
for
elections.
Sure.
And
for sure.
And you know, to say, what's it matter? It does matter. And you're
and
being a poor steward. Like,
yes,
you are being a poor steward.
If you don't vote. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
You're being a poor steward.
Yep. Do we bind people's conscience on that, you think? Is there a reason? Is there a good reason to not vote?
No, I'm not saying it's a sin or it's wrong. I'm just saying, it's my opinion.
It's a
you're
get
being
to.
A poor steward.
Yeah.
Like, you're being a anything that we're given. Like, we're called to steward it.
Yeah. So you're saying it's not the best decision. Do the best thing. Do the best right thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
Dude, appeasement, man. We went through it.
Man,
I wish we would have like done a definition of appeasement in the very beginning. Like a legitimate definition. I really wish we would have. Because like, I think we defined it for sure in the way that we spoke about these issues, these things. But next time, dude, you got to start with appeasement. Like, you got to define terms, man. It's a big deal. And that's, you know, shame on you, dude. That's what I'm saying. Do better.
Shame.
Do the next
says
best
says the guy
thing.
Who wants to talk about chickens or the gardens every single time we start the podcast.
I didn't talk
that's
about gardens. I talked about a chicken that I'm going
to
roast.
You always want to talk about cooking or chicken, or it means to pacify or placate by accepting acceding to their demands.
Okay.
Okay. Relieve or satisfy a demand or a feeling.
Dude, you're going to edit this and put this in the beginning. That's what you're going to
do. No, I'm not.
And it's going to make me mad.
No, I'm not going to edit it. Listen, all the warts, going out to the patrons as is. I'll do some editing.
Pacify. That is a great word. Literally picture a child who's crying.
You shove something in their mouth.
To appease them, just to get them to shut up.
Right.
Yeah. Or sucking on a thumb.
Right.
Like, that's what I picture, pacify.
But you don't actually solve the
issue.
No discipline, no training. You just, bam, suckleness, stop your crying.
Yeah, here's a lollipop.
Here's a toy, stop your crying.
Ah, here's $5 million.
Hey, I see you on the floor there flapping around with your arms and legs. Here's a candy bar, so you stop.
Yeah, here's some red dye number 6 from your juice box.
Oh, man, we're showing our age here. We're too old. I was thinking about this. Here's my public service announcement for this episode, to end this episode.
Dude, nobody even made it this far.
Yeah, they did.
All right.
Here's my public service announcement. Find yourself a wife who will tell you when you're growing hair out of your ears.
That's awesome.
So
that's a good woman.
I feel like I'm at the age now where I have to like keep control of my ear hair.
Oh man.
So and my wife is great. Like, she'll be like, it's time.
Like, you're freaking me out right now. It's time. Take care of that.
You're talking to me, but I'm distracted by the hair growing out of your ear that's waving at me. Go take care of it. So if you're like, I think if you're over 30, 35 and you're a male, maybe a female too, maybe you have some ear hair as a female, but definitely a male, you need to take a look in the mirror.
Check it out.
Shave that stuff off.
Did you ever go ahead
and then make sure that you have a wife that's going to keep you in check with it?
Yeah. And thank her for it.
Yeah, and thank her for it.
Don't be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Dude, if I had a boogie hanging on my nose, I want you to tell me. Because I don't want to walk around for 25 minutes. Everybody's looking at me, but nobody's saying it. You know what I mean?
I'd probably let, if it was a boogie hanging out of your nose, I might let it go for a little while.
Just don't get some laughs.
I just nudge everyone that passes me.
Hey, look
at his nose. Boogie out of his nose.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool too. But like, if it's like a serious thing.
Right.
Have you ever seen, I saw this on TV once. I don't know if it's actually true, but if you put like vodka or some type of alcohol, like on your finger maybe, and in your ear, and then light it, it instantly takes care of. I don't think you pour vodka in your ear. I think you get your finger wet with vodka or like some type of alcohol, put it in your ear hole, and then light that thing on fire.
Okay.
And I think it hurts for a second, but it literally takes care of everything.
Why don't you do it and report back?
Dude, you want to do it on the show? Do you want to do it live?
I am not doing it. No, you do it. You report back to see
I'm scared to do it. Like, I think I'm going to Google it and check it out first. Maybe watch a YouTube video or two first, because that's how we do things.
I'm not doing it. From chickens to vodka in my ear.
Dude, do you think it works though?
We're out. I don't know. You do it and then you report back.
I don't know if I have the guts or the courage to do it, man.
Come on. Hold the standard. Do it. Develop the standard for removing ear hair.
Oh, dude, I love it, man. All right, I'm going to go roast this chicken.